Blog Talk Radio.
Source Nation, join us now for Family Mix Monday with licensed professional counselor Jaquetra Bryant. Tune in as Jaquetra shows the different dynamics that make up families. Whether you represent the nuclear family, single parent, extended, grandparent, or blended family, Jaquetra has tips and advice designed to strengthen your family structure. Source Nation, here is your host, Jaquetra Bryant.
Source Nation, I'm your host, Jaquetra Bryant, and I want to welcome you to Family Mix Mondays. And we are ending our series of fostering families. And oh my goodness, if you haven't caught any of the last sessions of the other Mondays, please go back. You can find them on YouTube at Jaquetra Bryant or SRN Television. You can find all the other videos and recordings to listen and gather some more information. And so as we keep this thing going, oh my goodness, this guest is local right here in Atlanta, so I think it's going to be a really good one. We're just continuing this series of fostering families. I hope that any fear or any reservations that was once in your heart is gone, that you feel very comfortable. And if not, we're going to push you to that comfort level today, and we're going to give you some more information, how to adjust your children in, how to adjust yourself in, how to get more involved, any support groups and things like that, because we're not going to leave any questions unanswered with this series about fostering families. Remember, May is National Foster Family Month, so please get involved somewhere in your city. Please Google and look for some type of resources. Before we get more into my guests, I want to stop and thank our sponsors, Zelina Health, Wellness, and Fitness, Paper to Film Productions, Revolution Meals, Meet My Types Matchmaking, and New Covenant Praise Worship Center. And also, Source Nation, if you are interested in doing advertisement or just being a part of SRN Live Television, please contact Kathy B. And her email address can be found at Kathlyn1, that's with a K, KathylnNy. 1971@gmail.com. So I said it all wrong. KathyLynn1971@gmail.com or TracyJeffco@gmail.com. All those is one word if you are interested in doing any type of advertisement. And so I'm going to go ahead and tell you about my guest so we can get this show started and finish off this series that's been awesome. Again, please go back and look up SRN Television or Jaquetra Bryant with YouTube and find the other videos, and please continue to follow and listen and tune in. We have some great guests thus far. So tonight we have Pamela Tally Coney. She's a foster care program director, and Tally Coney joined the Bloom Foster Care team in April of 2015 from Benchmark Family Services, where she was the regional director and supervised a staff of 15 in the oversight of foster children and foster families. Pam has extensive experience in development of policies and procedures, risk management, implementation of client treatment plans, strategizing foster parent recruitment and retention, regulatory compliance, and case management experience. She has a master's in public administration and nonprofit management from Troy University and a BA degree in psychology with a minor in sociology. She is a certified CPI instructor, a lifetime member of Psi Chi National Honor Society in Psychology, and also a lifetime member of the National Beta Club. And so Pamela and I are going to be ending our series of fostering families. And so hello, Pamela.
Hi, thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of what you guys are doing this month for foster care. Thank you so much.
Yes, I'm so glad that you can be a part of this series. I have learned so much. Like, I knew a little, but, like, after this month, I've learned so much. And I know today we're going to just continue that going, and we're going to not leave not one family of two double negatives, so it's all the way wrong. We're going to make sure that every family member has every single question that they have in their mind answered today. And so,
absolutely.
Before we continue, is there more that you want to say about you or any new things that you and your organization have going on?
Well, currently right now, I'm not sure if you are aware or if your listeners are aware, but right now in Georgia, there are over 15,000 kids in care. When I say in care, I think a lot of times people kind of take that for granted and they think, well, 15,000, that's not a lot. There are millions of kids in Georgia, but that is a lot because when you think about 15,000, those children are not with their family members. Sometimes they're not actually placed with their siblings. So right now we're actually working with Douglas County DFACS because they have had an influx of children entering care in Douglas County. So for our foster care month this May, we've been working with Douglas County to specifically recruit foster families out in their area. They've had a lot of kids enter care in the Mason Creek area of Douglasville. So we've been going out into the communities to meet with people out in Douglas. We've been at Arbor Place Mall. We've been at Panera. We've been all over the community. So if any of your listeners are out in that area, we would gladly appreciate them giving us a call or, you know, answering the call to help foster kids in their community in particular.
And just kudos to y'all and you and your organization for just recognizing that this great need. And that's only like one county. That's Douglas County. And so, like, imagine that number you just named. Man, that's a lot.
That is a lot. Even in Douglas County, for any of your listeners who are familiar, it is a smaller county, but right now they have over 226 kids in care in their county. And most of those children, unfortunately, are not able to be placed within Douglas County, so they're actually being placed outside of the county, which is also traumatic. Right now, only 50 of those kids are actually in Douglas County in that area. And that can be said for kids in Fulton County as well, in DeKalb, in Clayton, in Henry. Most of the kids, unfortunately, are not able to be placed in the counties that they're from, and that's really a sad thing. So if any of your listeners, again, are thinking about fostering, I would strongly suggest that you come forth and allow us to meet with you because although Bloom, our organization, is located in Fayetteville. We actually recruit foster parents throughout the metro area so that we're able to keep kids in their home counties.
Yeah, well, good. Well, so let's start off by talking about your organization.
Yes, ma'am.
So Douglasville, or just around it, because we just need it. So tell us how Bloom got started. And just tell us more about Bloom itself.
Okay. Bloom is a private, nonprofit therapeutic foster care agency currently located in Fayetteville, which I mentioned a little bit earlier. And for any of your listeners who are not familiar with Fayetteville, we're about 20 minutes south of Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Bloom was founded in 1986 by a Fayette County resident by the name of Mr. Jim Friday. Mr. Friday was a part of a civil case. He was a juror. And unfortunately, in that case, the young child was brought into, I guess you would call it, foster care. But he was not able to be placed in Fayette County. So Mr. Friday, along with a group of other concerned Fayette County residents, got together and just thought about how much of a tragedy it was that this child had to not only be separated from his family, but now he didn't have a placement within the county. So they started a group home model of care 3 years later, which would have been 1986. We initially started out with two group homes, but as time changed, we changed our programming model. Basically, we did this in order to keep the children placed within a traditional family setting because this is pretty much what the trend is now. We currently operate three distinct programs. Our first program is known as the Bloom Closet. And the Bloom Closet was created in 2008 as a free clothing resource center for foster children throughout the state of Georgia. At the Bloom Closet, foster kids are able to access free clothing, free hygiene products, free school supplies, free shoes, free books, free toys, just a variety of things that kids will often lack when they initially enter foster care. So far, the Bloom Closet has served over 3,000 foster children from over 90 Georgia counties. Our second program is actually our foster parenting program. We launched this program in July of 2015, and so far we have served over 100 foster children within our foster care program. Our foster care program right now is primarily run out of our Fayetteville location, but we are able to serve children and families within a 50-mile radius of our office, so pretty much throughout the metro area. And we also have a third component to our programming known as Bloom University. Bloom University actually launched in 2017. This program is unique in that it actually provides our foster parents with the much-needed training and one-on-one support and resources to be able to better care for many of the children who are unfortunately traumatized as a result of things that they've gone through prior to coming into foster care and sometimes things that they've encountered while in foster care. So all of our programs are structured around being able to better serve the children in the hopes of reunifying them with their family members one day.
Hmm. Well, I like those models. Like, when you were talking, I was thinking, like, man, that's addressing a lot of areas, like looking at the need of the range of children that would be in foster care in Georgia, because 50 miles, like I live in Atlanta as well, so like 50 miles does cover a lot.
It does.
50 miles to work, but when you think about it, it really does cover a wide range of the, especially the South and then that Douglasville area.
Right.
And then it's a state issue.
As many people probably suspect, a lot of our kids are actually coming into care from the metro counties. So we have a lot of work to do to recruit foster parents in those areas. And also I want to mention, too, that Bloom also has a foster-to-adopt component to our foster parenting program, because we not only want to help the children who are able to transition home, but for those kids who are not able to transition home for whatever that reason may be, we want to be able to provide a forever family for those people, I mean for those children as well. So we try to have a continuum of care for our foster care programming because we want to be able to address all areas that may negatively impact the child.
I like that. I like that the model was based on really looking at the needs holistically and not only just looking at the needs for like, oh, let's get them placement, but what happens as this child is transitioning? What happens when this child gets into a home for the parent? What happens with this journey? And so I like that, like the Bloom's model appears to look at all those elements.
Right. A lot of times people, I will say sometimes will have a negative perception of what a foster child is. We have to be careful when people enter into our orientations, and I'll get into a little bit of that later, like what the process is to become a foster parent. But sometimes people will come in and instantly think that the kids are, quote, unquote, bad. So we try to inform them of what it's really like to be a foster child by having them visualize what it would feel like for them to be separated from their families and what that adjustment would look like for them if they entered a new setting and were separated for whatever reason. Because people fail to realize that a lot of times when people are entering the foster care system, whether they're young kids, older kids, or what have you, there is trauma in that, and they look at it like, okay, these people are bad or something's wrong with that child. But we all have different things that we've experienced in our own lives that had we not had appropriate support systems or coping skills, that this, the things that are impacting our foster children could have very well impacted our lives as well had we not had these systems in place.
So true. That's so interesting that you actually said that first. That was about to be my first question, where I was going to say, well, what is so that just means it's meant to be. I was going to ask, like, what are some things that, like, were reasons that children often get placed in foster homes? And maybe that can actually help some of our Source Nation and the viewers understand, like, what might a kid be walking out of as they are joining this foster care process?
Absolutely. A lot of times people will just assume, like, the kids are being physically abused or neglected. Of course, those are reasons why children enter care. But we've had also situations where they've been in what would look like a loving home environment, but mom lost her job. And mom is new into the state, and she doesn't have any resources or support. So mom may voluntarily seek assistance from the Division of Family and Children Services, better known as DFACS, and she may voluntarily sign her children into DFACS custody until she can get on her feet. So these kids aren't necessarily coming from, oh, you know, we were homeless or, you know, we were abused. Sometimes their parents lose their jobs. We also have kids who are entering care because their parents may have some domestic violence in the home. The kids themselves may not have actually been beaten. They may not have been starved or anything like that, but they're not in necessarily a safe environment because there's violence in the home. Of course, with the opioid crisis, we do see a lot of children who unfortunately are entering care not because their parents don't love them, but because their parents are battling with some type of substance abuse addiction and just need added support from DFACS in order to be able to, you know, get the help that they need to get some sobriety and to get back on their feet to be better parents. We also have kids who enter care because of truancy issues and delinquency, meaning that they may be a little bit older, and the parents are kind of at their wit's end, and the child's getting into trouble, and they may just, for lack of a better word, they may refuse to pick the child up from youth detention. And so when that court hearing comes about, the child comes into care because mom refuses to pick them up. We also have children who enter care due to educational neglect. Maybe they have a sick parent, and mom is not doing her due diligence to make sure the kids are making it to school every day. So then the school social worker gets involved and the kids will come into care due to educational neglect until they can resolve whatever it is that's going on in that home that's preventing mom from ensuring that the kids attend school every day. So there are just a variety of reasons why the kids come into care. It's not always abuse and neglect. It's just sometimes just a breakdown of support and resources within a family. When that parent reaches the point where they're no longer able to provide for the child because of issues that really have nothing to do with the child a lot of times, but things that the parent is going through, that's pretty much when DFACS will become involved. And unfortunately, people view DFACS as, I guess, the bad guy. But really, DFACS is really there just to help the parents to be able to get on their feet, to be better able to care for the child.
Mm-hmm. I think you named so many scenarios that can actually happen to any one of us, to be honest. And so
So
I really, really push breaking a stigma of so many things and breaking a lot of generational cycles. And I think one of those things is actually having conversations such as this and being able to break down this idea of what we think things are, because any one of us can, like, lose a job or have something unfortunate happen to us as we're parents, and something can happen where our children are misplaced or have to go to the home. And then that's an unfortunate event that happened. And the first safety is the child who actually is kind of impacted by these events.
Right. So that's why, you know, at Bloom we educate people when they come in to get more information, because most people, if you don't work in social services day in and day out, and all you see are these, like, horrible stories on the news about child welfare and defects, you tend to believe all the negative things. So we like to take the time to educate all of our prospective foster parents that these kids are just normal kids who unfortunately have had some pretty sad things happen in their families that have caused them to have to enter care. It's, the kids are not, quote unquote, bad. They really just need love and support.
Yeah. I have one client, well, I don't know if she's still currently a client, she never showed back up to her sessions, but one lady, as we take this psychosocial history, I was listening to her discuss like some her past, and at one point for a year, she wasn't in her mom's home, and she mentioned that she was like, not only did my other four siblings have to go, but my mom's boyfriend's son had to go because he, too, was staying with us. And I had to work through this journey of her blaming herself. And so she blamed herself because when she was on the phone with her dad, and she said her dad made her, and she said the next step she knew is the police came. And so pretty much when I broke down, like, what was going on after she went through, well, if I wouldn't have called the police, we wouldn't have had that year inside of a foster home. And she was, like, in second grade at that time. Now, I work at a university, so we're talking about years later. She's still carries this blame. And her, when we broke it down, she ended up telling me that she was like, they were staying in a one-bedroom apartment, and it was pretty much five kids there, plus the mom and her boyfriend. And I had to go and tell her that I was like, no, that actually was not your fault. Like, I had to break down the law when it comes to siblings staying, well, people staying in the same bedroom when there's opposite sex happening. And, you know, just like just things like that when it comes to bedroom to ratio of children.
Right.
So that she can stop carrying this guilt that she was carrying around for a good, like, 12 years of feeling like, you know, it's my fault, and not even understanding that why she was taking from the home for that year for life.
And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that speaks to why having a trauma-informed program model matters. At Bloom, we do take into account the trauma that these children are experiencing by virtue of entering foster care, and just the guilt, like you said, because sometimes the kids will blame themselves, like, oh, if I had never, you know, said this, then my parents would have never gotten into trouble, quote unquote, and me and my siblings would still be at home. Because we recognize that, we make sure that when our kids come into our program, we wrap them with therapeutic support and services. We ensure that they are able to get that counseling in place early on. We're making sure that they're still able to visit with their family members, and that we can still process the trauma and the guilt and all those things through therapeutic means. We give them a variety of outlets to make sure that, like, for in the case of your client, how she carried that for so many years, we know that that's a possibility. So we try to do that trauma work early on so that the kids can understand what's going on, to be able to release knowing that it's not their fault, and that they can go on and heal from this. That is really big for us. Our job is to make sure that whatever it was in place that caused the family to be torn apart, that by the time the kids are getting ready to transition, while DFACS is working with that birth parent, we're working on that child to make sure that they are able to go back into that home whole and not feeling like there's some big void or that there's something that was not addressed. So we make sure that we address all of that while they're with us.
And that's important. And I think, like, again, that's a part of this stigma. So we do hear horror stories, of course. They do have unfortunate, unfavored reasons as to why they've come into care. That's true. That's so true. And I think, like, part of having this program model that y'all have, with understanding that, like, this could be someone's story, but let's put something in place to address this or train the parents or reunify the actual, like, biological parents. I think that's so helpful. Do you ever, Pamela, have cases where you're able to work in unison with the foster care parent and the biological parent when it comes to helping this child adjust?
We actually do. It's kind of funny sometimes because the number one question that we are asked when our prospective foster parents come through to our informational sessions, they ask, well, how much contact will we have with the birth parents? Because generally they have, like, this view sometimes, and it's no one's fault except maybe, you know, just negative things that people portray in the media. But they are afraid that the birth parents are going to be bad people and that they're going to be, like, following them home and all that sort of thing. So we work hard with our foster parents and with our birth parents in a model which we call partnership parenting. And what that looks like is when the children first come into care, we have what we call a treatment team meeting, and we all work together to be able to do what's in the best interest of the child. Some of the things that the foster parents may do with the child that are successful, they will share that with the birth parent, and the birth parent will also share those things with them. So a lot of times the birth parents are able to attend, you know, medical appointments, school functions. It just depends on the actual case plan. But we train our foster parents to be able to work with the family and to be non-judgmental because it's truly in the best interest of the kids. The kids don't stop loving their parents just because their parents have issues. So we don't want to treat their parents as if there's something wrong with them either. We treat them with respect, and we teach our foster parents that if the child sees that you have a great relationship with their birth parents, then the child will adjust a little bit easier because they feel like, okay, I can make it. You know, I could talk to my mom, you know, once a week. My foster parent is, you know, she cares for me, as opposed to if the foster parent is presenting as being afraid of the birth parent or not wanting to talk to the birth parent. And for the most part, our birth parents are appropriate, and they are very receptive to having the foster parent, you know, care for their child. We haven't had a lot of issues with that. That model typically works very well.
Mm-hmm. I like that. It reminds me of a person's perception about, like, I don't know if before you were married, because I assume you're married.
Yes, ma'am.
I saw the hyphen, so I was like, before I started, you know, like, when we're in this dating world, people are like, oh, I don't want to date him because he has kids. I don't want to date him because he has kids. And they have this idea that there's going to be some mama drama or baby daddy drama.
Right.
That's what it kind of reminds me of, where here's this perception, like, ooh, I don't know if I want to get involved with the mom because the mom might be doing these things or the dad. And it reminds me of that. People already automatically have this assumption of this is what my experience is about to be. And it reminds me of that whole experience, like baby mama drama and mama, you know, baby daddy stuff.
Barring sexual abuse and physical abuse cases, typically the parents truly love their kids. They're just lacking coping skills. So we try to teach our foster families not to judge, because if they were fortunate enough, they being our foster parents, to grow up in a situation where they had support and had all this resiliency, then that's fine. But not everyone is afforded with that. And unfortunately, that is the case with most of our birth parents to our foster children, and it just makes the foster children feel more at ease when they can see a positive relationship between their birth family and the foster parent.
Let's talk about, like, since I really love the model of your organization, I want to also be able to talk to parents who might be listening to this series and they actually are a foster parent, and they are maybe wanting to connect more with their children and wanting their children to adjust, and maybe they do have a long-term placement where it may be that year and the child still might be struggling. What are some resources or things that you would suggest that some of the people who are currently foster parents can do to help the children they already have in the homes adjust mentally, emotionally, and just kind of physically inside of the new placement?
For current foster parents, even whether you're seasoned or it's your first go around at being a foster parent, one of the biggest things that you should seek to do is to establish a rapport with your child early on. And the way that you do that is you listen to the child without being judgmental, because they may tell you some things that are completely outside of your comfort zone. They may tell you some things that you've never personally been exposed to that you may not necessarily agree with. But you want to refrain from being judgmental, because that way they will build trust with you. You also, if you have multiple children in your home, you want to seek to have one-on-one time with just you and that foster child so that, again, they're able to trust you, they're able to get to know you better. You want to take interest in the things that they're interested in. Even if every day, let's say every Monday in your house is spaghetti night, but the child says, you know, I haven't had any, I don't know, like pizza, or I've never had pizza, or I've never had baked chicken or something like that, or baked chicken is my favorite food. You want to cook that meal for the child at least once so that they feel like they're a part of your family truly. You also want to make sure that when you're talking about your foster child, you refrain from referring to them as your foster child, because that automatically makes them feel like they're different from everybody else in the house. If they're going to be in their own room, you want to be able to give them the freedom to start, you know, decorating things, making it personalized for their comfort and their taste levels, as long as it's, you know, within reason. Because, again, you want them to feel like although they're not home with their family members, they have a home within your home, and they're not just a guest, that it's actually like a family setting for them. If the child is a little bit more resistant to you, and you may have, like, biological children, you want to start planning, like, family day, like game nights or outings, so that, again, the child can warm up to you all as a whole. Any of those things are very helpful in building a rapport with the child and assisting them in adjusting, because you have to think about how you would feel if you were in a brand new environment with people you don't know and everybody's just kind of trying to shove onto you the things that they're used to doing, but no one ever asks you what you like to do or what you like to eat or what kind of clothes you like to wear. So really taking that time to get to know the child, that helps with the adjustment period.
I like the ideas about the room painting. You know, I actually never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a really good way in. And that was a way that I remember even using with my own son when I wanted him to start sleeping in his room as he was, like, growing up. It was like someone made this comment. They was like, oh, you should try, like, allowing him to decorate his own room. And it feels like home to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like this is something he's a part of. So what great advice to even use that when it's someone who is having to stay there for a period of time. And just the food choices, that's excellent. I really like that.
It is very helpful, because a lot of times when kids are with you and, you know, during the day they're at school and they're, you know, preoccupied with all these different things. But generally when they come home, that's when they have that quiet time to reflect. And a lot of times that's when they start missing home. So if you can give them things within your home that will remind them in a comforting way of home, like, you know, they get to eat their favorite meal every once in a while, or they get to decorate their rooms. Like I said, all of those things are very helpful.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I think you brought up something else about the siblings, and I think that's something, whenever there's anybody who is a new sibling coming along, that's a big adjustment. So imagine someone who is new and you're a teenager, or you're new and you're a kid, how much adjustment that is. So maybe we can help some of the parents with that part, because people can be of various ages inside of foster care and get placed. And so are there different support groups or organizations or your organization that might offer some support or assistance if there are if the parent wants to adjust the teenagers more into the home or feel more comfortable having to have a home for a placement of a teenager?
There are, depending on where the foster family is located, there are various foster care association chapters. Generally, they're going to be per county. Let's say if you're in Henry County, for example, there'll be a chapter there that you can join with other foster parents who may have, you know, gone through similar things such as yourself, and they may be able to offer advice to you. At Bloom, we also have our own support group for our foster parents, and we're able to meet, and they're able to, you know, put ideas forth and problem solve with one another and support one another, and that is very helpful with them. I would say for any foster parent, it's important at, like, trainings and things that like that that you go through your county or through your own foster care agency, try to connect with other foster parents. It's always beneficial to be able to talk to someone who's going through exactly what you're going through. Talking with staff is, you know, it's good too, but as staff, sometimes we can't personally relate because we haven't been a foster parent ourselves. So I would always suggest that you connect with other foster parents because they are truly a great resource. And I would also suggest that if your agency or county offers trainings, make sure that you come to all of those trainings because that's the opportunity that you'll have to be able to gain other knowledge and other resources that you would not otherwise gain had you not gone to a training. Here at Bloom, we offer trainings twice a month in a variety of formats. We have face-to-face trainings. We also have webinars and online trainings as well. And additionally, like I mentioned before, we also have support groups. So all of those things are really beneficial to your foster parenting career. It will really help you to be able to better work with the child and to be able to be a better support to the child as a whole.
Now, Pamela, can people come in if you are not – if you have not gone through the process of foster parenting, but you really just want to, like, be sure, are they able to sit in on maybe some particular trainings, ask a couple of questions prior to even deciding if this is a good fit for them?
We have had we have specific trainings that we kind of open up to the community. They would just need to contact us, and I'll give you all that information later on. But we do definitely believe in offering additional support to families who may be interested. A lot of times when we talk to our parents, or prospective parents, during our informational sessions, they will ask the question that you just asked. And if we're, you know, starting that process with them, a lot of times we will invite them to come to some trainings, you know, just so that they can see if this is really going to be a good fit for them, or especially if they're uncertain, so that they can kind of understand better what this whole thing could look like for their particular family.
I can't help but to think, like, or to wonder, not really think, but wonder, why is the number growing when it comes to just so many things going on, but the particular issue at hand with foster care? Like, why are there more children in more counties and less people receptive of being foster care parents? Have you seen a trend as to what might be happening or this conversation is happening?
Well, there are a couple of things that are going on. Right now, there's been an influx in kids coming into care for the past few years, mainly because the state has done a better job of training mandated reporters. So we have quite a few people who now better understand how mandated reporting work. So we're getting more calls in that regard. But also because there are so many people out here struggling with substance abuse issues, if I'm being quite honest, there's just a lot of kids who unfortunately are coming up, and these are little kids who are growing up in homes where their parents are struggling with substance abuse. It could be alcohol, it could be prescription drugs, and, of course, it could also be illegal drugs, but their parents are just lacking coping skills. And, unfortunately, a lot of times it's generational where mom is on drugs, but her mother was also on drugs, and there are a lot of people on drugs within the community, and it's just passing down from generation to generation because so many of the people who are struggling with substance abuse issues have lacked resources to really be able to go and get the help that they need to be able to be clean. So when you add all of that together with the increase in the number of people who are trained as mandated reporters and also with the opioid crisis and just substance abuse issues rising on a whole, that's why so many kids are entering care and we have the numbers that we do have currently. And unfortunately, because although the number of children entering foster care has risen so dramatically the past couple of years, the perception of foster care overall has remained negative. So people are not necessarily banging down the doors to become foster parents. So we have spent a great deal of time educating the general public on what foster care really looks like, what the kids are really like, so that they're not just bombarded by all these negative stereotypes that really are just not the case. Most of the time with the children.
That's sad, but I can see it. You know, me, I'm in the clinical side, and as the clinician, as I listen to some of my clients, like sometimes, I hate to say this, but sometimes I wish they may have gone through some type of foster care because and it's hard to say that. Oh, goodness, it's hard to say that part, but sometimes when you're listening to this, like this story at the other end,
mm-hmm.
And literally, like, you're like, ooh, I don't, it, you probably would have benefited from leaving for a few years or a few months
to
get some other structure or to really get into an environment where you can maybe compare what it looked like to have a healthy setting or to be fed daily and things like that. And so you're right, like, this drug thing is becoming such a norm that, like, mm-hmm. Like if I take an assessment and the parent, if I'm taking an assessment and the client is just like, I was like, anybody have any mental health or substance related in your home? And they won't name mental health, but they'll be like, oh, yeah, like my dad smokes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you know, my dad is always drinking. And it's like a dismissive type of like response.
Right, because it's normal to them. They don't see it. They don't see it as abnormal. That's what they live through every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing about it is when we have kids who come into care from those type of circumstances, and once they've been with us or been with that foster parent for a few months or what have you, they begin to see that their home life was abnormal. And once they begin to see that is when our work really begins, because our foster parents start to model for them that there is a different way of life that you could be exposed to and that you could also have, you know, as you grow up. One particular case stands out in my mind. About a year ago, we had a sibling group of three enter care. They were living with their grandfather, who was trying to support their mom, who was addicted to prescription pain pills, and she also abused cocaine. The children entered care, and they were placed in what I would describe as a pretty, you know, middle-class home, and they literally thought that they were living in a mansion. They thought that this was the biggest house they'd ever seen. They couldn't believe that there was like a mom and a dad and they were going to get their own rooms. And, you know, they started really seeing that, you know, okay, there's a different side of life that we haven't even been exposed to. The foster parent in this particular case, she did a great job of working with their mom, who was still trying to complete rehab and, you know, get her own life together. but she struggled, and her kids saw her struggling, and they felt helpless in a sense because they wanted to help their mother, but they knew that their mother needed to take those steps on her own, and they were able to focus on, you know, their school here and, you know, getting their grades in order, and they did everything that they were supposed to do. But unfortunately, in that case, mom still never really fully complied, I guess you could say, with her rehab. So they ended up seeking an additional family resource, and they found a cousin for the kids. And the kids are, this week, as a matter of fact, they're getting ready to transition to their cousin's home. But they left care with more skills than they had entering care. They were able to see that, you know, education was important. Their mom didn't teach them that. They were able to see that if you work hard, you know, good things will happen. They were in an environment where they had to kind of steal just to eat and do things like that. So they left really thankful. They wrote letters to the foster parent and their case manager through Bloom, just thanking them for helping them to see that even though they came from that circumstance, their lives could mean so much more than that. And it's unfortunate that we say, like, oh, some kids would be better off had they gone into foster care. But in some instances, that's actually true because they are able to be in a stable home and see a stable, loving married couple and to, you know, not have to worry about where they're going to eat from day to day or where they're going to sleep or whether or not they're going to, you know, be assaulted in some way. And it's just, you know, we feel like it's a blessing for us to be able to train parents who are able to care for kids truly like they were their own kids. And we were able still to maintain a relationship with mom, even though mom did not do what she needed to do to get off drugs. We understood that it's not because mom does not love her kids. It really is because drug abuse is an addiction, and it's an illness, and it just doesn't go away overnight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Nope.
But, yeah.
But that's, I mean, like, that's so true. And so, again, it's really hard to say, like, oh, man, you may want to get a dose over here to really experience, like, what something healthy looks like. But to be honest, like, me on this therapeutic end, I see a lot of root problems. And in this root problem, I see it is inside of the environment. It is inside of, like, the family unit and the dynamic and what that looks like. And there's so many things that I can see are preventative. And I know parenting is something that's a challenge, and parenting is something that, based on how it goes, there's a lot of other impacts that come with it. And so I found in my own parenting to be humbled to, like, understand there's no one book, to understand that there is, like, you know, I grow also, and being able to listen to him and observe my son. And I found that that's helpful with for me. And I'm a parent. That's a single parent. And so I think that something inside of foster parenting or inside of any type of parenting, being able to kind of come to a humbling place to me is something that I would definitely suggest to people so that you can actually, like, make sure your home environment is good and positive and structured and healthy.
Yeah, a lot of kids, they unfortunately come from dysfunction, and that's all they know until they're exposed to something different. And unfortunately, too, for the parent, one of the good things about, I guess I could say this, good things about DFAC's involvement is that while the mom or the father or whomever is working on their case plan, they also offer parenting classes and counseling to the birth family so that they can learn how to be better parents. Because if we're over here, you know, on a private side, we're working with their kids and we're, you know, addressing all their trauma, it's important that while we're doing all of that, that mom's trauma and mom's lack of parenting ability and all that stuff is being addressed as well.
Right, agreed. Because it needs to be. Like, I mean, think about it. With y'all's approach when it comes to, like, addressing, like, as far as, like, the material parts of the clothing, when it comes to training the foster parent, when it comes to, like, the different things about helping the child, and in any type of visitations, there has to be some type of hands-on to the parents in order for this to even reduce, the number to reduce. Or if not, we just got great organizations.
Right.
The cycle goes on. So it's going to have to be where we're looking at, like, every single part that's being impacted here.
Mm-hmm.
It has to. And so I guess, like, some of the themes that I've heard this month, because I've learned so much with it, and you know, I stay on my clinical end, but I'm really tapped into the community with a lot of stuff and the needs of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so what about some of those children who might be on the end of the brim of kind of aging out of the foster care? Do you know if there's some support for those children if the families decide not to adopt them, or is homelessness something that is pretty high?
One of the things that we do, or one of the things that we educate our prospective foster parents about, is that there are children who remain in care beyond the age of 18. Those kids will end up remaining in care until the age of 21, as long as they are working or attending college. We have a lot of kids who, unfortunately, when they're 18, because what happens when you're 18, let me make sure I make this clear before I go into what I was just about to say. Children who've been in care for a long time and are looking like, okay, there's no, you know, reunification resource for me, I'm just going to, quote-unquote, age out of care. We start working with those kids when they're about 17 to start, you know, preparing a plan for them, whether that's going to be they're going to remain with their foster parent beyond the age of 18 or if they're going to transition into what we call an independent living program where they're going to be, you know, transitioning into their own apartment. So we offer these paths to the child. The sad part is that a lot of times these particular kids have been in care so long, when they're 18, they, quote-unquote, sign themselves out of care to say, you know what, I'm sick of defects, I'm tired of people telling me what to do, I'm just going to go out on my own. We try to prevent that from happening. That's where that homelessness population comes from. It's not because we've kind of kicked the kids out of care when they've turned 18. It's because these children, when they become 18, decide they no longer want to be affiliated with DFACS. For the children who decide, who we're able to convince to remain with us, because kids may be, I say kids, even though they're 18, they're still children. They still need a parent. They still need to be guided in their young adulthood. So for the children who we're able to convince to remain in care with us, if they're living with their foster parent beyond the age of 18, either we've gotten them into college or we've gotten them a job. With that foster parent is continuing to parent that child, and they're educating them on young adulthood. They're teaching them how to do laundry. They're teaching them how to drive. They're teaching them how to make medical appointments, all the life skills that are necessary to be successful as a young adult. That foster parent is going to instill in that child up until that child reaches the age of 21. At the age of 21, that's when that child is released from DFACS care. If the child chooses to say, I'm going to go into an independent living program and I'm not going to remain with my foster parent, that child will go into a program with other 18 to 21-year-olds where they will live in an apartment-style setting and they will have what's called a life coach. The life coach is kind of like their foster parent, like a stand-in for a foster parent. This person will work with the child to make sure they're either going to work or going to school, and this life coach will teach them life skills like how to drive, how to complete, you know, job applications, everything necessary for them to be able to be successful. As that child learns how to budget and pay their bills, DFACS will gradually, you know, reduce the amount of financial assistance they're giving towards the child's apartment and things like that until the child is able to pay the entire apartment rent on their own. And we try to make that transition again happen once the child is 21. We do encourage the kids to remain in care, especially the ones where we know they don't have a real resource when they sign themselves out. Like, we don't want them to be out, you know, on the streets homeless, living from couch to couch. Because if they were able to remain in DFACS custody, you know, DFACS will pay for their college education at a technical school or a public school in the state of Georgia. They'll just have, you know, a greater access to resources. So we work very hard with our youth who are, quote unquote, reaching the age where they can age out of care to try to continue to work with them in young adulthood, because at 18, to be quite frankly honest, they just are not ready to really be out there on their own. So we try to have those extra couple of years to really prepare them for young adulthood.
Especially if we're talking about someone who has had a history of maybe going to a different foster home or has, or their environment was dysfunctional and unhealthy, that caused them actually to have to go to the foster home. So it would sound like it's more beneficial to stay and gather those skills or look for a program or look for the resources in the community that will allow that process to take its place so that they, as an adult, can be very present and healthy parents themselves if they choose
right.
to be.
Because if you think about it, think about, like, when you were 18, if you'd had a, you know, unstable childhood and someone just said, okay, you're 18, you're out on your own. These kids are not ready for that. They really still need parents. So we try to encourage them to remain with us so that we can make sure that they're successful, because we do not want to see them out on the streets homeless, you know, if we can help it.
Yeah, not at all. It wouldn't be beneficial. I like the fact that there's continued services. I think during my experience, I worked at, like, United Methodist Children Home. I don't even know if it's still open. Every time I pass by, I think
it's still open.
I was like, I worked there, and I worked in, like, the one side with the younger children. And then while I was pregnant with my son, I worked in the part where the transitional living. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those kids, their whole goal was to be like, I just got a couple more months until I'm 18.
Right, they start counting down.
And I'm like, you just are tapping into your first job. Like, there's so much more to life as it is. And so I think the fact that I came, it was almost like a blessing that I was present there. It was like two homes, the boys and the girls. They were so interested in my journey of being pregnant. And at the same time, I was like in my master's program, and they were just like so delicate with just the idea of, like, wait a minute, you're still in school and you're still working and it's a child coming. And I remember it was almost like a blessing that I was placed there, because they slowed down their thoughts a little bit to listen to, like, this journey of continuing to sacrifice or continue to provide or prepare in such a way. And so hopefully, if I ever run into any of them, I don't remember their names, but if I ever run into any of them, then hopefully they went on and they're, like, productive parents, or they've gone off to college and things like that. But
I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is so, especially for our older youth, it is so important for them to have an appropriate role model. You were able to model that for the residents within the transitional living program. Here at Bloom, we have social workers assigned to each of our clients or our foster kids here. So they're able, along with the foster parent, they're able to model that, what success could look like, and to just kind of encourage them along the way, to show them a different avenue as opposed to, I got 15 more days and I'm out of here. Like, we don't want them to think like that. But they literally, like, when they're 17, they start counting down, and that's when we start really processing with them what life could look like if they choose to sign themselves out of care, or what it could look like if they remain with us.
That's so true. That's the reality of it. And so I really hope that, like, even through this series, that this has been something that people, their fears are out of the way, their questions have been answered. And if they've not been, like, I'm hoping they're going to get on the phone or get on emails and call and contact people. And so, Pamela, as we wrap up, Any final words of encouragement that you want to say to our viewers about Bloom or about, like, foster care itself? And then also if you can give your information so people can get in touch with you and the organization, any further questions and comments?
Sure. I just want to say to anyone listening to the program, if what we've talked about this evening has moved you in any way to want to help the children, I just want to encourage you to do that. I know that it could, you know, seem overwhelming and scary. You may say, well, I'm not sure if this is for me, but just think about this. These are children, just like your own children, who need a stable, loving environment, not because they're bad or that they've done something wrong, but because their family is in crisis for whatever reason. If you know that you're able to provide that loving home for them, even if it's only temporary, I would strongly, strongly encourage you to answer the call. At Bloom, we're able to assist you in going through all the trainings that you would need to become a licensed foster parent in the state of Georgia. I would encourage you all to contact our office. Our office number is 770-460-6652. Again, that number is 770-460-6652. And you can ask to speak to me, or you can ask to speak to Hannah, who is actually our recruitment and retention specialist. We would love to talk to you more about ways that you could help and become involved in the lives of the over 15,000 children who are now in need of loving foster homes within the state of Georgia. We would gladly love to assist you in making a difference in the lives of children because they need you. There are families out here hurting and who are broken, and if you can help, we would love to help you to be able to meet the need of these people.
And thank you so much, Pamela, for being a part of my series with Fostering Families. I have learned so much, and I definitely will continue to spread the word and just really talk more about it. In November, I plan on doing a series centered around National Adoption Month. And so
okay.
I definitely would love to have you and your organization back on because a lot of those children, as I've learned, they do transition into being adopted.
They
and so,
do. They do. And I just want to add, too, because I did mention that we do have a foster to adopt program. And we do. We have had, in the past 2 years, we've had a number of kids be successfully adopted within one of our foster homes. So if that is an avenue that people are also interested in, please feel free to give us a call.
Yes. No, thank you, Jeanette.
No problem.
Is there a website to Bloom that they also can look up and kind of grab
yes.
more of the information and just kind of write down?
Yes, we do have a website. Our website is www.bloomouryouth.org. That is www.bloomouryouth.org. And if you just so happen to be in the Fayetteville area, please feel free to stop by our office. Our office address is 150 Marquise Drive in Fayetteville, Georgia, and that is zip code 30214.
And I'll have to come meet you. My church is in Fayetteville, so I think I need to, like,
I
need to come by and, like, personally say hello. And so I just be like, on my way to church on Wednesday. I don't know how late y'all stay there, but we'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being a part of the series.
No problem.
And so, Source Nation, our guest, Pamela Talley-Coney, has so much great information to share. And so please, please follow up with every single guest that I've had. Follow up with every single, series and videos and go back again, watch the old ones, follow up, ask questions. Please get involved. As you've heard it from every single guest, y'all, the number is large. And I tried to read statistics off from several states, so please get involved. And so as I head out, I just want to remind you again, if you are interested in any advertising, please contact Kathy B. or Treacy Jeffco, that's Kathleen1971@gmail.com or TreacyJeffco@gmail.com. I'm Jakeetra Bryant, your host of Family Mix Mondays. I can be reached at jabryant1913@gmail.com. My email, excuse me, that's my email address. Follow me on Twitter at Jakeetra B. Also, further information with me on my website, www.b3mentalperformances.com, and join me in next month in June as I start a brand new series on health and wellness. We're going to get you right, parents, mind, body, and spirit for next month. So join me next week, next month on Family Mix Mondays.